you're going to do the EHD impact on licenses. Keith, are you going to do that one first today? I'm trying to give it to Keith, but he keeps waving me off and giving me chat.
Again, members of the commission, Chair, this is your wildlife program administrator. Keith will come up and handle the last few slides here on return licenses.
It's a long drive for a period.
It is. You got to get up early. So we'll just wait here for Chris to pull up. Just got a short presentation for you. Thanks, Chris. So you can go to the next slide, Chris. So just want to show some historical data here. If you look over the last 13 years, you know, 2021 was certainly a significant outbreak year for hemorrhagic disease, but we've seen this before. You go back to 2016 and 12, were other years where this disease was noted across the landscape. Just want to note that these are reported losses only. It's very difficult for us to have a good quantitative handle of what the actual loss is out there, just based on different types of reporting and things of that nature. But in the end, we just want to thank the landowners, hunters that helped document this and call our office and allow our staff to get this put into a format where we can document this and be as proactive when it comes to management in regards to licenses and following and trying to meet our population objectives. So Chris, next slide, please. So just a figure here kind of showing the reported of losses through time. Unfortunately, this thing kind of kick-started back in August, kind of in early August, with the prolonged drought conditions going on. You can see it continued into November. We even were able to obtain samples from deer that died in November that we got confirmation from the lab at SDSU of either EHD or blue tongue. And in the continuation of that in October and November is a little bit out of the norm, but I think across the statewide, we probably had a frost that did not appear until maybe 2 to 3 weeks, maybe a little longer than normal. So that allowed that biting midge to serve as a vector longer than normal in transmitting the disease. Next slide, Chris. Just a statewide map here. The black dots would represent reported deer. So when we get a phone call, we try to get the exact location of the reporting party will provide that to us, and then we document the number of dead animals reported and try to get those by, whether they were male or female as well. The red dots there would indicate lab confirmations from deer that we're able to pull a spleen from a viable sample and get that submitted to the lab for testing. So you can see the southeast, the central part of the state, and the northwest and western part was hit pretty hard. And, we hate to say it, but it was kind of interesting from a research standpoint to see some of that die off up in the northwest where we have hundreds of mule deer and white-tail deer radio marked. That's going to provide us some good information as to how that disease affected survival rates of those. These have been radio marked females primarily up in there, but to give us an indication of how impactful that disease can be from a survival standpoint. Next slide, Chris. Just a tabular list of information here with the number of reports, number of individuals, and the confirmations from lab testing by county. Those counties listed in red font there would be where either hemorrhagic, epizootic hemorrhagic disease or blue tongue was detected. On the right side of that screenshot, you can see the number of confirmed positive animals detected in white-tailed deer, mule deer, pronghorn, bighorn sheep, and an elk. You can see the total number of individuals by species. And just to note there, as we've seen in the past, it does significantly impact white-tailed deer versus mule deer and some of these other species. Not for sure what the deal is there, but might be that the habitat that those white-tails frequent and utilize where those midges might be based on those wetland conditions and mud flat areas, but whitetails seem to be hit pretty hard every time we see an outbreak here. So next slide, Chris. Just wanted to put together a summary slide here on the license adjustments we made. We kind of had three waves of proactive adjustments here. Secretary Roebling worked with the commission chair, and I'm sure the commission chair followed up with you folks, but we do have an opportunity and rule to take emergency action, and we worked with you as a commission through this process throughout the fall to remove leftover or unsold licenses. You can see the number of licenses and the associated tags with those. And then the third adjustment we made was removing licenses from the return drawing process that we had in those hunting units where we felt it just wasn't the right thing to do to reissue. Primarily, most of those were antlerless deer licenses. Just wasn't the right thing to make those available within some of those hunting units. So next slide, Chris. So what's next? You know, obviously, deer hunter harvest surveys will be coming out here very soon. We're going to be looking at that information. We do seriously take a look at all the comments that we get from hunters and landowners. We take that into consideration. As previously discussed, we have radio marked deer up in the northwest part of the state where we'll be evaluating how that disease outbreak affected survival during that time period. And I'm sure Andrew Norton or Andy Lindblom, the next time we get in front of you and share deer data, they will be discussing this topic here on how disease affected survival there from those researched animals. We'll continue to assess what the winter severity is going to be like this winter. You know, we're a little bit into winter. Things could stay the same or things could really go south on us and how that may affect survival amongst those populations. Once we have all of that, we're probably going to review our objectives, in particular for white-tailed deer. Do we still have objectives identified that will be proactive and address the losses that we documented and occurred, and do we have to do anything different from a licensing perspective for maybe the 2022 season? I can't sit here today and tell you that we do, but in taking together all this information, staff will discuss that, and if we feel that there's something that needs to be done, we'll obviously visit with administration, and if we have a department recommendation, we'll be bringing that to you as a commission body for consideration. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Keith, and he's got a few slides here on license returns.
Morning, members of the commission. Secretary Roebling, Keith Fisk, I'm the licensing program administrator. Couple slides real briefly. I know there's been some questions over the last couple meetings in regards to the number of licenses that were returned. So this past year in 2021, we had just under 1,600 licenses returned. If you folks recall, prior to the COVID-19 pandemic, our licensing office didn't take return licenses for any reason, for the most part, unless there was some extreme medical situation. In 2019, or 2020, I should say, because of COVID, that's when we started to take returns. And then we added a little more structure to that process here in 2021 to make it a more fair and equitable redistribution of those licenses. Where we landed, and I briefed the commission here, I think, prior in September about that. But we basically made it so the only people that were eligible for those return licenses were people that did not already hold a buck tag. So it really was a great effort to be able to get those licenses out to people that they weren't going to go and be able to hunt for a male deer that year unless they picked up a tag in that return tag drawing. So out of the 1,600 total licenses that were returned, approximately 1,000 of those were returned in western South Dakota. So about 65%. The majority of those returns did come in, unfortunately, after the return tag drawing, and we weren't able to necessarily push those out to people just due to the timing because the season started and when those licenses came back in. And again, I know there were some questions, you know, were these licenses returned because of EHD? I mean, a lot of times people will write on their licenses when they come back. You know, I talked to a landowner. He said, you know, there were low deer numbers, so our hunting party's not going to go out to that ranch to hunt this season. But there are also notes, you know, maybe a guy dislocated his shoulder or his schedule changed, and we offered returns for any type of reason this past year. So it's really hard to decipher, were those returns because of VHD or were they returns for these other reasons? But just anecdotally, you know, looking at those results that or the notes that came in, I would say that a large majority of those were because of EHD. Saw a lot of notes because of, you know, they had reached out, done what our agency had asked, talked to those landowners prior to going hunting, and we did see a lot of notes because of the low deer numbers, so that was a good thing to see. And then, as Chad had stated, we did reallocate right around a little over 400 licenses back out to people to be able to go hunt this past fall. But again, none of those were reallocated in those areas where we had taken back licenses because of EHD. Chris, next slide, please. This is a map that might be a little bit hard to see, but it's color-coded, so the darker or the deeper red or orange color was a county where we had higher numbers of return licenses. So you can see predominantly same areas that Chad had in his map where we had some significant EHD concerns there up in the northwest corner part of the state. 35, which is Harding County, Meade County, Perkins County, some of those areas. And then, of course, we did have West River Special Buck 79. Those were returned. We did reallocate those because they're valid anywhere in Western South Dakota. So we felt that, you know, if people have areas to go and they're outside of those, some of those EHD areas, why not reallocate it? So we did have 79 of those. But, yeah, that's it in a nutshell. You can see predominantly where those returns came from. I think it lined up pretty good with the concerns from EHD. But I just want to put one shout out. 1,600 licenses doesn't sound like a lot, but when you have to process those on top of every other license that's going out in the fall, the licensing staff really did a great job this past year making sure all those preference points got reinstated and proper refunds were issued. I definitely want to thank those folks. And with that, I'd certainly answer any questions if you have any on that.
Commissioner Locken here. I know this is a little off the subject, but where we've had a lot of deer die off from EHD, and we've got collared deer out there, are we seeing those deer move in to fill the voids? Are we seeing any movement out of those deer?
We looked. I think I'll phone a friend and have Chad ask for that one for me.
So now he wants to be my friend. Through the chair, Commissioner Locken, that's a great question. I can't sit here and tell you, you know, if we had 30 deer succumb to the disease on the landscape, did we have 30 deer come back in and fill that? Obviously, when habitat and those areas become available, there's obvious an opportunity for critters to come in and fill those spaces. So I can't sit here and give you a good answer on that. So,
thank you,
Mr. Spring.
Ahead on my ranch, we have a lot of wintering areas. Two different areas where the deer winter a lot. The whitetails come in, and in our perspective, what have come back this winter is less than half. Some areas. The east place is 24% there, what usually went there. I think parks are going to have to watch some of these areas, some of these units. We sell too many licenses next year. It's going to keep it down long time. I think it's going to be a couple, 3 years in a lot of areas before numbers come back. Just like on my ranch, the boys and I know over 30 bucks have died, and they're way less than that still alive. So it's hurt the numbers a lot in some areas.
Good, Sheriff, if I can respond. Yeah, Commissioner Spring, that's a great comment. I mean, I think we've I don't want to say we've learned, but we have recognized and observed those same effects of that disease. You know, it can be real local. I mean, even up in a county, we can have just a township really get hammered by this disease and the remaining portion of that county not be too affected. But I know Kevin was a big game person during the time, the last outbreak we had in 2016, I think, and maybe even 2012. And we unfortunately have seen
Some of those hunting units take much longer to come back from these types of losses than what we may have anticipated. So point taken, and yeah, staff will be monitoring this for sure.
Maybe just a quick that the easiest way to spread, I mean, it seems like a lot of knives have been under the X factor to the right solution.
Yeah, so Mr. Chair, it is a virus that is transmitted by a midge, an insect that breeds within those habitats, those mud flat, swampy areas where they reproduce. And then on top of that, these deer are hemorrhaging internally, right? So they're bleeding inside. They have a high fever. They're hot. They're thirsty. And that's why you likely see a lot of them laying in dugouts or wetlands when they expire. Horrible disease. They do succumb to it pretty quick. I think deer can die of this within a day or two or 3 days. So it's a pretty quick deal. So we were hoping for an early frost this winter or this fall, and it just didn't happen. So
thanks. That's a great report. Appreciate it.